Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Thank you, Kramer. Welcome back into the final hour of The Drive. Benny Heiss back behind the microphone. That there, good-looking young Jordy Nelson-looking fella. He hates it when I say that, don't you, BK?
I love it. It's
the best. Am I wrong, though, Heiss? Does he look like a young Jordy Nelson?
I think he looks like he looks like BK. Right. I don't ever really see the Jordy Nelson comp. Like, I suppose, like,
you're
tall,
just mad because
short
you look
hair.
Like Nick Foles. That's why. You're upset.
Again, Nick Foles has a lot of money and doing fairly well so far.
Yes.
I'll take it.
Big blank Nick. I am the sports machine, Sean Levine. I regret to inform
you. He also has that going on for him.
He does, which is always good. I regret to inform you that we tried to land Ryan Leaf. I figured that'd be a good guess. Former Chargers quarterback, Chiefs and Chargers going at it on Monday Night Football. BK did what he does and got his phone number and texted him. And he said, can you come and join us today? And Ryan Leaf texted back. And his response was, and I quote, sorry, I haven't watched one snap of NFL football this season. I might not be the best guest. You probably should have followed that up with like, no, it's cool. You can still come on. I mean, that would have been an even better interview asking Ryan Leaf about the NFL without him watching. Here's my theory on Ryan Leaf. He's still pissed off about what happened on September the 20th of the year 1998, Heiss, when he came into Arrowhead and a 2-1 record with the Chargers and went 1 of 15 for 4 yards. He's still bitter about his performance, and that's why he didn't come on this radio
show. I think that's perfectly reasonable. Again, you think about the Chargers and some of their history before Philip Rivers at the quarterback spot, letting go of Drew Brees, had Ryan Leaf. Things have not gone particularly well for them.
They had Stan Humphries.
Oh, good.
Say something about Stan Humphries. Played with Natron Means.
He's got a funny last name. That's what fair. I can say about Stan Humphries.
As we do every day at this time, Kramer, take it away with the hits.
Okay, now, from the beginning.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Check it out.
The top stories of the day, every day at 5 o'clock. The hits.
Cue it up.
One.
So Mahomes talked to the media today, and he says he has the best, it's the best he's has ever felt in some time.
Yeah, I would probably say going into the Jacksonville game, just being able to not have to worry about the ankle or not have to worry about the knee, and just being able to go out there and play football the way that I've played it my whole career so far.
He might feel great, but how healthy is he?
I think I take him at his word. I was the one, and I was wrong, very wrong, when I kept talking about Pat's ankle the last couple of weeks and reminding everybody it wasn't just the knee that was on the side of his leg, which I'm no doctor, but I know it's not supposed to be there, but it was the ankle that he's been dealing with since week one. And I was saying that I don't know if the Chiefs want to use the whole playbook against Tennessee. I was curious to see if he could roll out of the pocket. And then BK watched the game. And Patrick Mahomes, you could argue, played better and looked better than he ever has. Eye test, numbers, 440 yards, probably should have been 500, 3 touchdowns, no picks, got comfortable out of the pocket, thrown across his body, clutch at the end of the game, the jump pass to Mecole Hardman, like, when it comes to Pat and his injuries, it's crazy I'm saying this. That's actually not one of the concerns I have right now.
Yeah, not at all. And by the way, on today's injury report, Patrick Mahomes was a full participant. His ankle wasn't even listed as one of the issues for him, so it doesn't even seem like he's getting treatment for it anymore. That's probably the biggest thing that I noticed in the game is you previously, had he gotten rolled up on or if he was tackled, like you always kind of waited to see if he reacted with his ankle. And this week, that never seemed to be an issue for him. The knee seemed like it limited on him on one play in particular. There was one play where he drifted to the right, tried to kind of circle back around. And on those plays, typically he's able to outrun the defensive lineman. He wasn't able to do that on this one. So he is limited athletically right now, but it didn't seem to limit him on any throws. I think Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes moving forward, and that's the way that we should judge him.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly reasonable. It's going to be a better test for Mahomes this week against the Chargers. They're starting to get healthy, especially with the pass rush from Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa. Playing on the turf, playing in the altitude in Mexico City, I think is going to be a bit more of a challenge than against Tennessee, whose secondary has been cooked. They're bottom 10 in DVOA against the pass so far this year. So if we're all expecting Pat Mahomes to be the guy that carries this team to victory, it'll have to be more on his plate than ever before, especially against the Chargers.
But the Chiefs could have back Mitchell Schwartz, LDT, perhaps Eric Fisher, and the offensive line will be as whole as it's been for Pat all season. So that's a good thing going forward.
No doubt about it.
Two.
Eric Fisher was a full participant in practice today. How big of an impact will Fisher have against the Chargers?
Oh, huge. I think that as this season's gone along, there have been two guys that's contracts have gotten much, much more expensive. Like Pat, the way that he's played, maybe he's going to cost you a couple million dollars more. Chris Jones, the way that that guy plays every week, he's got another sack. We recognize his importance. Like, he's probably earned himself $5, $6 million this year based on the way that he's played. And I think that when you're talking about the contracts and all the guys that are going to eventually have to get paid for this team, it's come down to Pat and Chris Jones, and then how are they going to spend the rest of the money? I got to be honest, BK, I forgot what the question was.
Okay, Eric Fisher, he was back at practice today, which is fantastic.
Oh, yeah, that's a good thing.
The Chiefs are getting healthy, and this is what we've all been waiting for.
And pay Eric Fisher, too. He's making money, too. That was my point.
Since week one that the Chiefs have actually had a healthy offense, and it looks like that might be the case this week. Mitchell Schwartz was limited today, but it sounds like he's going to be fine for Monday night whenever they take on the Chargers. Sammy Watkins was a full participant. LDT was finally a full participant. Eric Fisher, a full participant. And, of course, Patrick Mahomes back at practice in full as well. So, the Chiefs, for the first time since legitimately the first drive that they had of the season, might have their full allotment of offensive players. This is going to be the first time that we actually see what the offense is able to look like. I'm looking forward to it.
What are you laughing at, Heist?
The sports machine memory bank of short-term memory of trying to remember what the question
is. It's been shot since KU.
It's just like a big, you know, the monkey with the cymbals just going boom, 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 back and around.
I said no monkey.
Listen, anytime you can feel that your franchise quarterback finally has all the protection that he needs to be successful against a really good pass rush in the Chargers, I think is always going to be a good thing. Again, that's going to be a key for Pat Mahomes, is making sure that he stays upright. I still worry a little bit about this mysterious turf in Mexico City. If it was bad enough for a game to be canceled a year ago, I still have a little bit of concerns coming into this week, even though all the reports, and there hasn't been many of them, would indicate that it's a new turf, that everything is going to be fine. So anytime you can make your quarterback feel a little bit more comfortable knowing that he has the guy protecting his blind side back there, I think it's another positive indication for the Chiefs to finally take another step forward in the right direction.
Protection is very important. I learned that in health class my freshman year. What's next? Three.
MLB Insider Network, there we go. John Heyman today tweeted, Royals, with the new owner coming in, have very limited budget with just a few million to spend. They hope to bring back Gordon and add a pitcher or two. Is this a good or bad sign for the Royals?
It's not a good sign. When you talk about the owners not necessarily willing to spend a ton of money, I feel like we heard that when David Glass first got to town. It was only a couple of months ago, BK, correct me if I'm wrong, that John Sherman took over the team, and we heard that he was a baseball guy first and a fan and a rich guy. I thought there was a chance that he was going to pour not a bunch of his money, but some of his money into this thing and give the Royals a real payroll, a real chance to compete. It sucks to hear this, but again, it's just one story.
Yeah, it is just one story. I found this interesting from Cody Tapp. He says that the Royals have an estimated payroll of $106.7 million in 2020. Payroll last year was about $105 million. So it sounds like they want to stay flat at that point of $105 to $110 million. Like you said, they're trying to bring back Alex Gordon on a cheaper deal. They want to add in a pitcher or two, likely in the pen. I was hoping that they would go in on guys like a Marwin Gonzalez. Now, he's not available this year, but last year I thought he was a guy that made a lot of sense for them. 2-3 year deals, guys that can kind of serve as bridge players that are competent Major League Baseball players. Doesn't sound like they're going to be in on those. I'm a little surprised by it. I'm a little disappointed in it, frankly, but it sounds like that's going to be the direction that they
go. This is the second opportunity that John Sherman has had to go and make a pretty big splash from the very beginning. First was with the manager. They could have gone in whatever direction he wanted to, but they decided to go with Dayton Moore's pick and Mike Matheny. This is the second opportunity that he had to be able to make a big splash and say they're going to be really competitive and get the juices flowing a little bit for Kansas City fans to say, okay, now we're starting to see some positive returns in this new owner's first year. John Sherman's about smart money. That's how they operated in Cleveland. And again, they didn't necessarily have the attendance numbers that Kansas City was able to bring. They were better than Cleveland despite not being as productive and as good of a team. So we'll see how they end up operating here. I think John Sherman is operating under the pretenses of let Dayton Moore do whatever he wants to do to help operate this roster and stay at the budget that they need to be at.
One thing I'm glad they're not doing is bringing in a bunch of guys on those one-year deals that they brought in this year. Those were a disaster for the Royals. They had a ton of dead money as a result, and most of those players weren't playing for them by the time that the season ended. That's something that I'm glad they're not doing. I just wish they would have gone a little bit longer.
I don't even mind the one-year deal too, BK, but it has to be for the right spot in the right situation. If you're a young team, if you're in full-on development mode, if you can't turn those guys around, like John Jay, when they moved John Jay months before the trade deadline, that was a good move for them.
Sure.
But again, you have
a guy
to
like Billy Hamilton, who you know exactly who he was.
That's exactly
that
the
wasn't,
point.
That wasn't a great move for them.
Right, even though they ended up getting something for him, right?
Cash consideration.
Cash consideration. That's something for the Kansas City Royals.
You guys done? You guys done talking baseball?
This is a big story, man. Like I know you don't want to talk about the
no,
Royals
keep
right
going.
Now.
We got till six.
This is a significant story.
It's Thursday night game tonight. Big football game on Sunday. Super Bowl team MVP. But no, we can keep talking Royals if you want. What's next, Kramer?
That was it.
That concludes it.
No, that's it. That's it for the hits. All right,
we can go back to football now.
Good, thank you. We can get back into the football. I ask you guys this, all right, because I had no idea LeSean McCoy was going to be in street clothes this past Sunday. That surprised me. What are the chances that we see LeSean McCoy in a Chiefs uniform coming up on Sunday? Because we were just read the injury report, and one name that I did not hear is LeSean McCoy. And if he is on the field, BK, do you have any idea if he's going to get more carries, less carries than Damien Williams, or how they're going to use that guy?
I think we do. I think we've seen it all year. Like, they plan to have him in that 10 to 12, 10 to 15 touch range.
Which I'm cool with.
They've never deviated from this. Whenever LeSean McCoy is on the field, the only time that they've changed their plan is when he fumbles. After that, he doesn't get the ball again. But when he's on the field and he's not fumbling, he's getting every single game that he's active 10 to 15 touches. I think that's their plan. I think they would like to do the same thing with Damien Williams. And they just split the reps between the two that way. I don't think this is as mysterious as a lot of people are indicating at this point. The Chiefs' plan has been very clear at running back. They want to get 10 to 15 touches for each guy.
Yep, keep him
fresh.
And
then they move forward throughout the season, and they'll see where it ends up in the end. But they've made this very clear from day one, and they've never really deviated outside of when LeSean McCoy puts the ball on the ground.
I do think there's something, and there is some validity to the fact that even with LeSean McCoy out, they really were relying upon Damien Williams. They were relying on him all throughout the season in the passing game. You saw the 19 carries last week. I think they're looking at him as saying, this is a guy that can carry us, but we have LeSean McCoy in a backup spot, a guy that we're paying guaranteed money to if we need to. So you're right. I think he's going to get anywhere between 8 to 12 carries. I think if it were up to them, if they can get Damien Williams comfortable throughout this game, especially in the second half, be able to take off some time off the clock, I don't think they'll hesitate to go back to him.
Remember all the texts, BK, that we got on Monday and Tuesday this week when Kareem Hunt came back and everybody reminded us that he'd look really good in a Chiefs uniform and they could use a running back, and all of a sudden the Chiefs running game has struggled and all of that. If he goes off tonight on national TV and everybody's watching, and then you think about the Chiefs' struggles and the fact they haven't been able to find a running back, but they've got four of them technically on the roster, and Damien drops the ball on the turf, and LeSean McCoy drops the ball on the turf. If this guy goes off tonight, Kareem Hunt, I bet that's the most text that we receive tomorrow. People talking about the Chiefs' running game is the biggest difference between the offense right now and what it was a year ago.
What do they want him to do then? Like, he was caught on video kicking a girl after he's had multiple incidents in nightclubs. Like, we can talk about him all we want to. Right, what did
revision,
you want?
Total revisionist.
What did you want the Chiefs to do at that point?
I want them to do what they did. I just think it's going to be a tough pill to swallow when you reckon. It's kind of like watching Marcus Peters a year ago, right? And obviously he wasn't great a year ago, but he was pretty much better than anybody in the Chiefs' secondary.
I think it's kind of like watching Marcus Peters now. Yeah. Last 2-3 weeks with
that's
Baltimore,
probably a better comparison.
Back to, you know, I think 2 out of 3 games. 85, 96
yards. That one felt different, though, because they had an option.
And real
right?
quick, let me clarify. I'm not saying the Chiefs fans actually want Kareem Hunt back. I'm saying that they want those numbers back and that type of player back and the guy before the video came out. They need that type of running back. I think that when you look at the holes that you have, the running game is clearly a major hole for this team. And then you look at Kareem Hunt, and if he goes off tonight, you kind of go, damn, and shake your head, remembering what you had last year. The same way that when you traded away Marcus Peters and all of a sudden the secondary sucked and everybody came on and said, man, if they just had a cornerback, well, they did have one, and you're watching that success for another team.
I think that's perfectly reasonable. But again, I think you sort of know what you got yourself into. And down the stretch of last season, nobody was talking about Kareem Hunt. Nobody had any sort of worry about what the impact was going to be in the postseason because Damien Williams stepped up. He was great in the running game. He was great in the passing game. We talked about it at the beginning of the season. The Chiefs running backs were averaging, you know, the most per yards per target in the passing game in NFL history. So they can get back to that point, especially now that the offensive line is starting to get a little bit healthy. So Damien Williams has a chance to change part of that conversation, even if Kareem Hunt does have a good game. And the fact is he has Nick Chubb in front of him getting a bunch of carries, so I don't even think that's going to be a potential option.
Yeah, and I think the difference between, like, I do think there were legitimate reasons for Chiefs fans to be frustrated and disappointed by the Marcus Peters thing because they didn't have to trade him.
Correct.
Like, there was no reason why at the time they had to make the move that they did. It was stunning in the moment. Remember whenever those reports started coming out, I was like, they're not actually going to do
right.
this, right? And then they did, and it came out of the blue, and I was like, really? They got a second-round pick for what I believe to be one of the best corners in the NFL and one of the guys that you would want? Like, one of their biggest weaknesses this year is the fact that they don't take the ball away from the
right.
other team. There's nobody better at that than Marcus Peters, so say what you will about him. That's what the difference was. They had a choice with Peters. they didn't really have an option with Kareem Hunt. And so I think there's a differentiating factor there. I would also add, kind of going to Benny Heiss's point of, I think the biggest issue with the running game has not necessarily been the running backs. I think a lot of that goes back to the offensive line and the fact that LDT's been out for much of the season. We've missed Eric Fisher in a huge way for much of the year. And I still think that the biggest issue with this offense is not the running game. It's
I was just going to say really quickly, the Chiefs haven't had an interception on the defensive side of the ball since October 13th in the loss against Houston. That's a long time to go without a pick. Yep.
It's a month. They've gone a month without a pick.
It has to be the offensive line, right? Because if you look at Andy Reid running backs, you can go all the way back to his days with the Eagles. You can go back to Jamal Charles or Spencer Ware, whoever's running the football last, Kareem Hunt, Damien Williams last year. If you run the football with Andy Reid, especially with Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback, you should have success. Andy Reid, 10 different times in his career, has had a top 10 fantasy football running back. There you go, Benny. Nice little stat for you.
Appreciate it.
At the end of the season, this year, clearly, he's not going to have one of those guys, which tells me it's probably the offensive line, not the guys running behind him.
I think so. That's fair. And also, the injuries played a factor, too. Both LeSean McCoy and Damien Williams have missed time due to injury this season.
Yeah, and in the end of the day, this team's not going to succeed or fail because of the running game.
Correct.
It's not going to. It's the passing game. There's no team in the NFL that passes more often in neutral game script. So when they're up or down by 7 points in any given game, the Chiefs are the team that passes more often than any other team in the league. And there's a reason why they're doing it. It's because of number 15. He's the MVP. He's the best player in the NFL. And so this team's going to be decided based on what their passing game is able to do. And if they're able to score more touchdowns than what they have been so far, they've been settling for too many field goals.
Kramer's at the controls. Benny Heiss back behind the mic. That's BK. I'm the sports machine, Sean Levine, taking you up until 6 o'clock right here on 610 Sports Radio. I was taking a look at the numbers, Heiss, and the Chiefs right now are averaging 28.4 points per game. We bring up this stat a lot. Last year, they became the third team in NFL history to average 35 points per game. They finished at 35.4, so you do the math. They're averaging 7 points less per game at this point. I think there's a few things you can point to. At the top of the list, Patrick Mahomes is out for a couple of games. So when Pat's out, you're not going to put up as big of numbers. Matt Moore is not Pat. Thank you, Captain Obvious. Two, we were just talking about it, Kareem Hunt and the running game at whole. Three, Eric Fisher. And maybe this is the biggest thing, and BK's pointed this out a lot the last couple of days. The red zone efficiency. For whatever reason, last year, the Chiefs were so good once they got the ball down to the 20. Whether it was handing it off and creating holes or finding Travis Kelce or Patrick Mahomes rolling out. And it makes a lot of sense, right? They've got a big tight end who can toe tap, who can jump, who can catch, who's got big hands. They've got a speedy wide receiver. They've got option 2, 3, and 4 at wide out. Like, the Chiefs should be one of the best red zone teams like they were a year ago. And look at the numbers right now. They're in the bottom five. They keep kicking field goals instead of going for touchdowns. To me, that's the clear and biggest difference between this offense right now and the offense that we saw last year that was all-time great. They're settling for field goals instead of scoring touchdowns.
I think they'll get better, though. Like, I think you have to believe that at some point, once the offensive line gets a little bit healthier, you have a little bit more trust in the running game in the red zone, especially inside the five. Like, that's where Damien Williams' final 3-4 games of the regular season last year was so effective in red zone touches and opportunities. I think he had, 5 touchdowns in his final 3 games. He was terrific. And so that's where I think they envision that role for him coming back, making life easier on Pat Mahomes, knowing that he doesn't have to completely do it himself. And if I would imagine that after the bye week, and especially against this game against the Chargers, once he's able to get down to that role and feel like he's healthy and the rest of the offensive line is healthy with him, they're going to take some more chances, especially in the running game.
The other thing that we haven't really brought up is the fact that last year they were really great in the return game and they were really great at scoring on defense. They had a punt return touchdown by Tyreek Hill last year. That certainly helped in terms of the points per game. And then on defense, they ended up, I believe, with 5 touchdowns on the season, whether it be from interceptions or from fumble returns. So when you add all of that into the mix as well, that's more points that you have lost this year. They're just not getting them in that way. They're not adding points in any other way. The special teams has taken a step back. The defense has taken a step back. And the offense has taken a step back when it comes to their red zone efficiency.
Especially last week, the special teams took a giant leap back. And that's one thing the past few years we haven't talked about very much because, frankly, they've been good under Dave Tobe. And this year, they haven't been. So this just came across, and I got to talk about it because it blows my mind. If you had a defensive player of the year vote right now, BK, who would you vote for? Just out of curiosity. Who
Probably
would
be Nick Bosa.
Okay, that's fine. 49. Nick Bosa is 9-1 right now. That's a perfectly reasonable answer. If I asked you the same thing right now, Heiss, who would you vote for NFL defensive player? Who would you go with?
I'd probably Minka Fitzpatrick.
Minka Fitzpatrick is actually the favorite, believe it or not, according to Bovada, the favorite to become the NFL Defensive Player of the Year at 5-1. If you're curious, Stephon Gilmore, 7-1. Aaron Donald's 10-1. And then I saw a name pop up that I thought, wait a minute. Why is this guy on the board? It would kind of be like if you were asking the question, who's going to lead the league in receiving yards? You wouldn't have DeMarcus Robinson up there, right? It wouldn't make any sense. He's got no chance. Frank Clark's name is still on the Bovada board for NFL Defensive Player of the Year. Now, before I tell you what the odds are, 80-1. So it's not going to happen.
Telling me there's a chance.
80-1. Like, what the hell would Frank Clark have to do the rest of the year? Not just to earn his contract or to have me shut up or some other guys at this radio station, but to win NFL defense. Remember when Derek Thomas played against Seattle and Dave Craig and he had, what was it, 7 or 8 sacks in that one game, broke the NFL single game record?
I mean, if Frank Clark did that twice, he'd be good.
He'd have to do that every game the rest of the way, and then your 80-1 pays out. That's just ridiculous to me.
So how much are you going to put on it?
$5.
Okay, fair enough.
I got $5 on it. I do think if the Chiefs can get back the Frank Clark that they were sold the bill of goods on, then he's that difference maker that we've been talking about on the defensive side at the beginning of the season, at the trade deadline, because CDOT, BK, and a lot of people thought, you know what, if the Chiefs don't make a move on the defensive side, then they're not going to win the Super Bowl. I think the move, Heiss, is you arrest Frank Clark, you let him get as close to 100% as possible. And I'm no doctor. I don't know anything about a pinched nerve, but I do know that we found out about it. He did sit out a week. So something tells me rest is not going to make it any worse. If you can get back the Frank Clark that we thought we were getting by sitting him until the playoffs, I've seen enough of him. You don't need this version of Frank Clark to win football games. I say that's how you make this defense better.
That's sort of the no-brainer component of the argument, right? Is that if Frank Clark not at 100% is on the field and not helping your team be a difference maker on defense, why do you continue to play him? Is it because his name is Frank Clark? Do you feel like what he's giving you at 75, 80%, whatever it is going to be enough to be able to help you win? If the answer is no, then you're right. If it can elevate your team to win when he's healthy, then give him another 2 weeks off. I think that makes plenty of sense.
I think the problem is right now you're down to 2 healthy defensive ends.
Damn it, you keep bringing up this really rational point that they need warm bodies.
Alex Okafor is out. So right now, Frank Clark and Tano Passanio are your only defensive ends on the roster. Now, obviously, you could kick out Chris Jones. He could be a defensive end for a few plays here and there, and he's going to have to because they need somebody else to play out there. But if you sit Frank Clark, you are now down to 100% of the snaps on Sunday need to be played at defensive end by Chris Jones and Tano Passanio. 100%. They get no time off. You might get some plays where Reggie Ragland is playing edge for you. That's how low they are on bodies that can play defensive end for them right now. So it's a great theory. It's a great idea if they were 8-2 and they had guys that were healthy at defensive end, but they're not 8-2. They're not 8-2 right now, and they don't have those bodies out there. And I don't even know that any time off is going to make this injury any better for Frank Clark. I don't know that that's going to be the case. So for all of those reasons and plenty more, I don't think that's what they're going to do or should do.
They won't let me bet $5. I just tried. 10's the minimum, and I can't do that. I can't put down $10 on Frank Clark, even at 80-1. That's throwing away a steak and shake, and I'm going to steak and shake.
Still throwing away $5.
I can't do it.
Speaking of betting odds, Cody Bellinger is your 2019 National League MVP winner. Cody Bellinger.
Well, there goes my $20 bet on Christian Yelich. Damn it. Thanks for letting me know that and piss me off live on the radio. Did he really?
He was.
Did he really?
He was indeed.
How much you put on Yelich?
$20 at 20-1.
It's not a terrible bet.
It was a great bet.
For a month of the season.
Yeah, I know what happened, but he was he was heading toward another MVP. He shouldn't have been 20-1 at the beginning of the year.
You took advantage of a solid market, my friend.
It wasn't a winning bet, but it was a good bet. Kind of like always having Benny Heiss join us. Always a good bet.
That's very kind of you. Good to be here. Always a lot of fun.
Always. Do it again sometime.
I'll be here. Be here next Thursday. I'll talk with BK on Tuesday. I'll talk with Steven Serta on Sunday for Fantasy Advice with Heiss. It's always a good time.
Okay. Well, then we'll hear you then. That's Benny Heiss. I'm the Sports Machine. That's BK. That's Kramer. Coming up next, we put a bow on this bad boy. It's a drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll step back inside the mind of the machine with Kramer and BK. I'm the Sports Machine, Sean Levine. People asking about CDOT. He is down in Louisiana right now, in New Orleans being more specific. He's wrestling a gator as we speak. So we'll talk to him about that.
The best part about this job is if you're gone for one day, people are convinced you're fired. It's the best part of the job.
He's wrestling a gator as we speak. So we'll talk to him about that coming up on Monday. That's the thing about CDOT. Remember when he took us to Weston?
Yeah.
and he showed that he really likes the local flair. He was drinking those. What are they called? The wine slushies? Mm-hmm. They have a name, don't they? The wine slushies?
That's what I call them.
The wine slushies and smoking a cigar and stuff. Like, whoa, I didn't know this guy had that side. So that's why he's wrestling a gator right now down in New Orleans. Let's get back into the Kansas City Chiefs, where we were talking about all the issues that this team has and all the injuries and Andy Reid and all these different things. And then we agreed on one thing yesterday, that you still got Patrick Mahomes. And when it comes down to the playoffs, and if it's three games or four games, it's basically a tournament, and you've got the biggest weapon in the tournament. That should make people feel good. Because I feel like after the Minnesota win, there was a really good feeling in Kansas City. You just beat a team you weren't supposed to with your backup quarterback. The Patriots just lost to the Ravens. You were getting Patrick Mahomes back. You were playing Tennessee. Like, it looked like the horizon was really bright for the Chiefs, and I feel like that light was completely shut down when they lost to Tennessee. That being said, I think coming up against the Chargers, then you got the bye, and then you got the Raiders, there's a couple of big things going for you, and it's Andy Reid. He's 23-3, BK. He's had 23-3 in his last 26 games in the division. By the way, last time I checked, the Chargers and the Raiders are both in the division. The only thing he's better at than beating teams in the division is winning after a bye. And the Chiefs have a bye after this game, and then they face the Raiders. So you should be able to relax a little bit, because you know that you've got Andy Reid the next couple of weeks at what he's best at.
It is what he's best at. The problem is it also coincides, and it happens to be the same thing that they've struggled with, and that's night games. I heard this earlier today from Colin Cowherd. I want to react to this on the other side, because I think he makes a point that I disagree with, but that I find interesting and that I think we're going to be talking about come Monday.
1-7 in your 8 biggest games. Yes, you blow out bad teams. Yes, you're unbeaten in September. Yes, you can throw the ball and not look. I get it. I need you to win more games against TV games. You know, we always roll our eyes at Kirk Cousins, and we all know Mahomes is better than Kirk Cousins, but you got to start winning those Sunday games and the Thursday games and the standalone games and the pressure games. You got to start winning those games. Kansas City doesn't win those enough, and so they're out of my Super Bowl bubble.
And what he's referring to there, of course, is the primetime games. Like, the primetime games are the games when everybody nationally really watches what you're able to do, right? That's where we made our judgment on Jimmy Garoppolo. That's where we made our judgment on Kirk Cousins. This is where quarterbacks really make their name, is on those national standalone primetime games. And for whatever reason, over the last 2 years, the Chiefs have stunk on national primetime games.
And that's what the facts tell you, although I do take a little bit of exception with Cowherd talking about Patrick Mahomes. Like, Pat's the one that hasn't been able to win these games. They've lost these games in spite of Patrick Mahomes, just like they did in the Tennessee game, where Pat was at his best, and he threw for 440 yards, probably should have been 500, 3 touchdowns, no picks. And we saw that, BK, 2 or 3 losses last year, where Pat had nothing to do with the end result.
No, I understand, and I'm not disagreeing with you. That's what I was going to get to, is, like, I don't think this is Patrick Mahomes' fault.
At all.
But there will come a time, and I think it's Monday, when people question, okay, why isn't he winning these games? It's unfair. It's the same thing that I said earlier. It's totally unfair for me to say, Patrick Mahomes, you need to be the reason why this team is winning, as opposed to trying to look at the defense and saying, no, you need to be better. It's unfair of me to do that. But that's exactly what people are going to start doing. They're going to start saying, man, in his last 11 Monday night, Sunday night, or Thursday night games, he's 3-8. That's strange. And a lot of that is because of the defense. Some of that is because of the coaching. Some of that is because of fumbles. There are a number of different reasons as to why we can explain what's happening as the way that it's happening. But Patrick Mahomes needs to start winning these games. And on Monday night, it is a borderline must win. It's a game that we mentioned the Michael Jordan comparison earlier. Michael Jordan, there were certain nights where he was just not going to let the team lose. He was going to make sure that they won. He was going to stop the bleeding, and they were going to win any given night. That's what Mahomes needs to be on Monday night.
Yeah, but Jordan could play defense, and if Pat could play defense, they'd probably win every game.
Sure. But on Monday night, Patrick Mahomes needs to rise above. He needs to be the reason why they win. And I don't care what the defense does. Patrick Mahomes has to be the reason why they win.
I thought he was the reason why they should have won on Sunday. I thought he was the reason why they should have beat New England last year a couple of times. I thought he was the reason why they should have beat the Chargers, why they should have beat Russell Wilson. And the defense let him down. So I hear what you're saying. The facts are, Pat has to be at his best for this team to win football games. Like, there was a 20-game stretch, the first 4 games of this year, and all 16 games last year. You can even throw the playoff games in, where the reason the Chiefs won football games was not really because of Andy Reid, was not really because of Kareem Hunt or Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce or any of the guys on the defense. It was because of Patrick Mahomes. He was Superman. He was awesome. He was the MVP. He played better last year, you could argue, than anybody's ever played the position, and that's why the Chiefs won all those games. I'm not sure that you can continuously count on that. Maybe for a little while.
You have to. Like, as much as you may not want to, this is what the Chiefs are, and we can disagree with it all we want, but we came into the year. How were the Chiefs going to win the Super Bowl? What were the discussions that we were having? The discussion was, well, they're going to have the best offense in the history of football, and the defense is going to be 20th. Well, the defense is 20th. They're living up to their end of the bargain. The offense hasn't. The offense is like fourth or fifth in the league. And so if you want this team to win a Super Bowl this year, the way they have to do it is by their offense being awesome. The offense has to go back to what they were a year ago. And if they can, that's how they end up going to the Super Bowl. It's not the defense is what it is. We've got to accept it at this point.
Speaking of the Super Bowl, I think this is, I don't want to say it's the Chiefs Super Bowl the same way that it really kind of is the Chargers Super Bowl, where if they win, then they're still alive in the division. They control their own destiny. They're feeling pretty good beating a team like the Chiefs. And if they lose, that's probably capiche for the Chargers in 2019. The Chiefs, BK, need to go into this game with that same feeling. This is our Super Bowl. We have to go out there and win. All hands on deck. This is not a drill. This is the real deal, Holyfield. And the entire playbook should be open the same way that it was last week, except for the Patrick Mahomes quarterback sneak. Save that play. Everything else, this is one of those games where if the Chiefs go out there and win, then the next 13 days are going to feel just fine before the Oakland game. If you lose this game, it's going to feel like the sky is falling, and it probably should.
Yeah, it should. And I heard this earlier today from Frank Clark, and it was the first time that I feel like I've heard the defense and really the whole team start to hold itself accountable. Here's Frank Clark earlier today.
Like you said, being more aggressive, you know, capitalizing on opportunities when they're there, not making the mental mistakes. You know, I believe we had 10 men on the field on one of the plays last week. I take part of the blame for that, and you know, being one of the leaders on this team, and you know, just the substitution parts of stuff, and then just making plays. You know. As a defense, we got to make plays. I believe we had 8 missed tackles last game. You see a lot of those things convert to first down conversions. But, you know, going against the running backs nowadays, you got to make plays on these running backs. You know, some of the best running backs in the game make the best plays after they get hit and after contact. So
the Chiefs need to hold themselves accountable. The Chiefs at this point have to look at what they've been and say that this is unacceptable. We came into the year with realistic, legitimate Super Bowl contending aspirations. How do we become that team? Look at what you've done wrong. Look at the fumbling issues. Look at the defense against the run. Look at the drive stalling out at the 25-yard line. Look at all of these different things. The special teams issues that we've been looking at. The penalty issues. Find a way to correct each and every one of those things week by week moving forward. And that's the way that this team gets back on track.
I'm not sure if they can fix all of that. I think that there's a lot of things that have gone wrong for the Chiefs this year, BK, that are very fixable. Now, the injuries, you can't do anything about that. Although they've kind of gotten lucky, if you will, in a weird, twisted, roundabout way that the injuries, by and large, happen the first half of the season. That's not to say guys won't go down the second half, but now they're coming back, and it seems like this week they're as healthy as they've been all year. Part of the reason the offense hasn't been as dynamic as it was last year is because of the running game. And you can say that's because they lost Kareem Hunt. You can say because Damian Williams has underperformed. You can say because Eric Fisher has been out. But the obvious thing is the running game hasn't been the same. And the red zone inefficiency. Last year they were great once they got the ball down inside the 20. This year they haven't been. I don't know if they can fix all of those things, but I think they can fix a lot of those things. You can throw penalties in there also. So something tells me that the best is still yet to come for the Kansas City Chiefs in 2019. Before we get out of here, Kramer, farm me up some bees. Let's go back inside the mind of the machine. Thursday night football, BK. Pittsburgh at Cleveland. Don't look now, but if Pittsburgh wins, they've got the same record as the Kansas City Chiefs. Are you surprised? No. Are you surprised the Browns are a 3-point favorite in the game tonight?
No, I think they're the better football team. I know that sounds crazy to say, but the Steelers stink, man. Like, we can keep making all of these things out about how the defense is better. They are. Their quarterback is Mason Rudolph. He's not good. I know you can look at the numbers and say that he's better than Baker Mayfield. That's perfectly fine. The Steelers are not a good football team, and their quarterback is really bad. And if you have a significant disadvantage at the quarterback position, I'm not picking you. So I'm taking the Browns tonight.
I'm telling you, either the Steelers or the Raiders or both are going to end up in the postseason, and we're all going to go, where the hell did that come from? Apparently, the Astros have been stealing signs for years. Big deal at all, or just gamesmanship?
Oh, it's a big deal.
Really?
Yeah, like you, it. It's sometimes you learn. Let me clarify here. The old school way of doing it, where you just learn what the sign is, like you're stealing signs that way. Like for instance, in the NFL, there are certain signs that you do whenever you're doing an audible, right? And if you learn what that sign is and what the play is whenever they're doing that, or in high school basketball, you've got play 1, 2, 3, and 4, right? And you learn what their first set is, their second set is, their third set is, and so on. Whatever, that is what it is. When you start having cameras that are on the catcher and you're learning what their signs are that way, and then you're relaying that to the hitter in a different way, that's when there's a problem. It's the technology aspect that is an issue here.
I've done something like this before in baseball, but not like cameras-wise. Say I'm on second base and I realize what the change of fist.
Yeah, that's been happening for decades.
Close fist, open fist. That's pretty much the normal thing if you're on second base.
Yeah, that has been happening for decades.
And that's fine. I think that's okay.
Sure, whatever. That's gamesmanship. This is different. This is with a camera. With a camera, it's unacceptable.
NASCAR, baseball, you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. That's what I say. No big deal.
That's because you hate baseball.
Yeah, I don't hate baseball. Don't like it as much as football or basketball. That's fair. But I don't hate baseball by any means. The Chiefs are in Mexico City on Monday night. Did you know that, BK?
I was unaware.
What's your favorite salsa in all of Kansas City? Mine is the best chips, I would say, are probably at El Patron. The best salsa is probably at Margaritas.
I'll go back to jalapenos. It's probably what I would go with for best salsa.
Celeb birthdays today. Quick game of guess my age. You can get in on this, all right? Kramer? Pete Davidson. How old is Pete Davidson today?
Who the hell is Pete Davidson?
Really? Saturday Night Live? Pete Davidson?
Is he about maybe 78?
Okay. You don't know who Pete Davidson is. He's 25. Do you know who Yanni is?
Who's Yanni?
I don't know who Yanni is.
Do you know who Putty? He's Yanni 65. Do you guys know
who is Yanni?
Yanni's the old, I think he plays the piano.
Is that Yanni or Laurel thing?
Yeah, no.
You guys know who Yanni is? Do you know?
Oh, Yanni. Okay, yeah. Practical Jokers. That's the reason why I know that.
Do you know who Putty is from Seinfeld?
I didn't watch Seinfeld.
Didn't watch it either.
All right.
I think you're in a different generation than we are.
No, trust me. I would say 90% of the people who are listening right now know who all three of those people are. Yanni,
yeah,
Putty from Seinfeld, and
Pete
Davidson.
Yeah, because of over the age of 25.
All right. You guys heard of this guy, Danny Matthews, right?
Yeah,
you've heard of Danny Matthews?
Yeah.
The voice of the Royals? All right, it's his birthday today. How old do you guys think Danny Matthews is? Kramer, you get first shot.
I'm going to say 72.
I'll go 73.
77.
Yeah,
and he's been the voice of the Royals for 50 years. Like, what's the longest job that you guys have ever held? Danny's been the voice of the Royals for 50 years.
Yep.
Our boy CDOT is down in New Orleans for the weekend. What's a better weekend visit, BK? You been to Nashville?
Yep.
You been to New Orleans?
Yep.
Okay, what's the better weekend visit, Nashville or New Orleans?
Depends what you're looking for. Nashville's great if you want to go where there are all of the bachelorette parties. Like, if that's what you're looking for and you want to listen to some country music and go on Broadway and enjoy yourself that way, it's a perfectly fine trip. New Orleans, a little grittier. There are more bars instead of clubs. I prefer that vibe. I would go New Orleans.
You can find me in the club. I don't know if you do that. With a bottle full of bub. If you could visit any city.
By the way, the text line completely agrees with both myself and Kramer.
About what?
None of them know who that is. Any of the three that you just
really?
Mentioned. Yes.
Y'all don't know Pete Davidson, Putty from Seinfeld, and Yanni?
Seinfeld makes sense if you're over the age of 30. I've just never seen the show, and so that means nothing.
And my name may be Kramer, but I've never watched it.
That's a terrible job by you. I've got a Kramer poster hanging up. I'm not making that up.
So I'm on your wall?
No, the actor that played Kramer. What are the chances that the Texans, BK, can go into Baltimore and beat the Ravens on Sunday?
I think they've got a good shot of doing so. I actually think they have the advantage at the quarterback. The problem is they have a disadvantage at coach, and they have a disadvantage on defense. So I think this is going to come down to if the Texans win, on Monday the story of the week will be Deshaun Watson just won the MVP. Like, that's how it happens. The way that it happens is Deshaun Watson has his best game of the season, whereas if the Ravens win, I think there's a number of different ways that it can happen. I think the defense could make it happen. I think Lamar Jackson could make it happen. I think their running game as a whole with Mark Ingram could make it happen. There are more ways for the Ravens to win this game, but I do think the Texans, because of Deshaun Watson, definitely have a chance.
Do you think there's an argument to be made if the Texans do go on the road and beat the Ravens, the Texans are the best team in the AFC?
No, not at this point. I think it's just a I think there's a tier one, and I think in the AFC, the tier one is the four teams that we all talk about all year, right? It's the Texans, it's the Patriots, it's the Chiefs, and it's the Ravens.
I guess it's the Chiefs. At some point, it will be the Chiefs. I don't think they're on that tier one right now. The flip phone is officially back with the re-release of the Moto Razr. Did you have a flip phone back in the day?
I did, yeah. I actually had a Razr. It was one of my favorite phones I've ever had.
Me too. The first phone I ever had was more like the Zach Morris phone. It was way too big for anybody, and it didn't work half the time and dropped pretty much all the calls. And then I got the Sidekick, and my life completely changed. Like, the Sidekick was great.
You got the Sidekick?
Oh, yeah.
I never was able to get it. It was too expensive, and it was only T-Mobile, wasn't it?
I believe it was, yeah.
Yeah, I was on Sprint, so I was never able to get the Sidekick. Do you even know what we're talking about? I feel like you missed this, right, Kramer?
I actually had a Razr Motorola.
Okay.
Back in, like, seventh grade, but then I got rid of that quickly for an iPod Touch.
You can know what things are even if you didn't live through the era, BK.
What
if you've never
BlackBerry?
Been to a certain place. The BlackBerry, I think, is officially dead. I'm pretty sure.
That's the one with, like, the ball.
A lot of reporters still have BlackBerries.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I think the BlackBerry, and I'm not being trying to be funny, I think they might have stopped making BlackBerries.
I think they did. I think there are a lot of reporters that still have the BlackBerry. Like, not they have new BlackBerries. Not like they have the iPhone 10 as opposed to the iPhone 6. No. They have the BlackBerry.
What? if that's true, if I find out that's true, I'm bringing my pager back out. I've still got it. I found it the other day. It's red. It still looks pretty cool. If what you're saying is true, I'm busting back out my pager.
It is 100% true, and these are the same people that still have AOL emails as well.
That doesn't exist either, does it?
That's not a thing anymore. AOL email still.
That can't still be a thing.
It has to be.
Actually, my grandma still has an @AOL email address. It makes no sense to me. Did you guys see Wichita got a new minor league baseball team?
Hey, what's going on with this? Who are they affiliated with? Do we know?
No, but I know they're called the Wind Surge. Come on now. Like, really? Of every name you could go with, the Wind Surge. Now, I'm not saying that everybody's got as good of an idea as I have. Like, when Kansas City finally gets an NBA team, that they name them the King Cobras. King Cobras, KC, shout out to the old Sacramento Kansas City Kings, the Marching Cobras. You call the Sprint Center the Snake Pit. There are no snakes in the NBA right now. I'm not saying everybody, BK, is as creative when it comes to naming teams. But the Wichita Wind Surge...
it's not good. It's arguably the worst name that you could possibly come up with.
Although I didn't like the Thunder when it first came out, and I've kind of come around.
It works.
I've
it
come
works.
Around to the yeah. Oklahoma
Scroll
City
Scroll through
Thunder.
All the minor league baseball team names. You'll find more.
Where are the Wingnuts?
Some of them are at least funny.
I like the Wingnuts.
Like, a lot of them have some sort of hilarity to them. This is just a bad name. It's just not it's not good. The Storm Chasers.
Watch out for the wind, Surge.
At least the Storm Chasers has something to it.
Wind is very dangerous, actually. That guy across from me, that's Kramer. Sitting next to me, BK, my good friend Brandon Kiley. Normally my producer, but my co-host yesterday and the rest of the week. Thank you to Benny Heist for sitting in. I am merely the sports machine, Sean Levine. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel, he said, right here on The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.